Welcome to Your Aged Care Compass podcast. Join us to find out how to support your older loved ones at home. We're going to help you make sense of Australia's aged care system. We talk about legal and financial considerations for aging and how chronic health conditions impact your older loved ones' well-being. And we share real life stories of where it went wrong for people and how we got them back on track.
Hello everyone, and thanks for joining me again today. I'm Coral, your host, and I'm excited to have Anna Melliser join me again on the show. Anna has been involved in the home care sector since the mid-1990s and weathered all the changes and reforms that have led us to where we are now. She spends her days working with providers to improve their communication with their clients and families through her monthly newsletter, Home Care HQ. And more recently with tailored resources to demystify support at home. Anna, it's great to have you back on the show. Our last conversation about the grandfathered participants under support at home has been one of our most downloaded episodes. Today, we're going to be talking about another cohort that are impacted in a different way as they move into support at home on July the 1st. We'll also be talking about another couple of aspects of support at home that aren't being discussed as much. To begin with, let's start with the group of people who had not received a home care package or were not in the national priority system or queue, waiting for their package to be assigned at September 12th last year. Who's this group, Anna?
Thanks so much for having me again, Coral. It's lovely to be chatting to you again today and to your listeners. So you'll remember from our last conversation that there are three distinct groups of people that are moving from the home care packages program into the support at home program. So we've got the grandfathered clients, the hybrid clients, and the newbies. So we've already dealt with all the grandfathered clients, and hopefully that was really helpful for people. And today we're going to be just unpacking and exploring the hybrids. These are a very interesting cohort of participants in the program. So they're kind of neatly contained and easy to identify. So of all the different cohorts, this one's actually quite easy to identify. These are the people who have been assessed as eligible for a home care package anywhere after the September the 12th, 2024, and before the 30th of June, 2025. So it's around a nine-month time frame. So anyone who's assessed as eligible for a home care package in that period of time are the people that fit into this hybrid group.
Anna, what's different about how support at home will affect this hybrid group compared with the grandfathered group who were receiving a home care package prior to September 12th?
This is interesting because I've heard some people say, oh, this transitional or hybrid group, there's no big deal because, you know, they just all basically going to be treated like a new participant under support at home. But in actual fact, that's not really the case. This is why we're calling them hybrids. It's because they have a foot in both camps. They have a foot in the home care packages program and tentatively dipping their toe right now, but they will have a foot in to the support at home program as well. So they'll have a blend of some of the elements of both the home care packages and support at home program. So let me explain that a little bit more for you.
Can I just say, I loved that analogy of one foot in home care packages and the other foot in support at home. For me, that gives me a lot of clarity. So anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt, Anna, but I just thought that was a great analogy.
Oh, no problem at all. So the reason that they are the hybrid is that they will experience all of the same features of the home care packages program as grandfathered clients right up until
the 30th of June.
Alrighty. So what that means is that they will have a home care package funding level of level 1, 2, 3, or 4, their provider will be working with them to develop a home care plan and do assessments and so forth. They will have unspent funds, potentially, if they don't use them all at the time. They will have automatic approval for all three service categories, so into new support at home. So that's the everyday supports, the independent supports and the clinical supports. So they're going to be moving into this new program with all of the same conditions. Oh, and they'll also be able to use their quarterly support at home budget to pay for things like assistive technology, equipment and other bits and bobs, and home modifications if they've got the sufficient available funding to do so. So they have this same level of flexibility. They get used to having a home care package, and all of that will follow them into the new program. The one key thing that is going to be the difference between the hybrids and the grandfather compliance is that the no worse off principle does not apply to hybrids. So remember last time we talked about grandfathered clients, and I know you've mentioned it a lot in your different podcasts, is that there is a no worse off principle that applies to grandfathered clients, but it relates only to the fees or co-contributions that they pay out of pocket. So your hybrid clients, same as the grandfather clients in every way, except the no worse off principle does not apply to them in respect of the fees or co-contributions that they will be paying once the new program starts on the 1st of July.
Beautifully explained, Anna. That was perfect. So we've identified what this group, the hybrid group, looks like, Anna. We know where they sit, what they look like. Given it can be up to 12 months for someone's package to be assigned, the only people realistically who would be approved and then be assigned their home care package by July are likely to be people who have been approved for a high priority package. Maybe not, but I think realistically that's what we're mostly looking at here with these hybrid participants. So they enter the system as we currently know it, retaining the benefits of the current system until July 1st. And then the goalposts move for these people. Let's take a closer look at how this group is impacted. Let's unpack service provision first. Within the hybrid group, how does service provision work? Namely, what can the person expect with the development of their care plan and then ongoing service provision?
So just thinking about this in that service, from a service provision perspective, because these hybrids have been assessed within the home care packages program period, in this 9-month period, transition period, they will be approved and assigned as a home care package level 1, 2, 3, or 4, as we said earlier. So what that means is if they have, for example, a level 3 home care package and they start their package in December 2025, they will still be able to have their home care provider work with them to develop a care plan that meets their needs, that can cover across all the different service categories. So they will be pre-approved for all the 3 support categories: the independence category, the everyday category for things like domestic assistance, gardening, home maintenance, and meals. They'll be pre-approved for the independence category, for shopping support, personal care, that sort of stuff. And they'll be pre-approved for the clinical supports, so allied health and nursing. So they won't need to go back to the assessment services if they need to be flexible with their care plan and how it's used. Right from the start, they will have that flexibility built in because they were assessed during this transitional period.
That is such a fantastic comment that you've made on that, Anna, because that actually hasn't come up in any of the podcasts where I've been speaking with industry leaders like yourself. And I think it's certainly complex. And I would be suggesting that people who are in this hybrid group are possibly not aware of what you've just explained. And fantastic that they get to retain that flexibility. But if their package doesn't start until later in the year, they still have that flexibility because, yes, they weren't in the system prior to the 12th of September. So, you know, they don't reap all the benefits of the grandfathered people, but they've still got certainly that advantage of still coming in after 12th of September, but still having some of the benefits that do relate or align with grandfathered. I'm not going to say too much about that now because I'll probably just be confusing people. But I just wanted to say thank you so much. That was such an important point that you unpacked for our listeners.
No problem. I was actually thinking, gosh, I wonder if that's just a little bit too confusing, that information. And just to sort of go back to clarify that point that you made a moment ago about not having the benefits of some of their grandfathered counterparts, it really, really just comes down to the no worse off principle not applying to them. So every other benefit, such as that flexibility, their ability to be able to talk to their provider, and if they need some additional services or some equipment, they can still use their quarterly budget to pay for all of that stuff. They don't have to go back, like a newbie participant will, to go back to the assessment services to get approved to just add
nursing for example,
even to add home maintenance for that matter, or any other services. So I know one time, well, at some point we will get into what's happening with the newbies, but these hybrids will still have all of those, that flexibility built into their package, and they will be determining their care plan and how their funding is spent directly with their provider, not having those pre-approved service types from the assessment services.
Excellent. So while we're talking about co-contributions and fees, Anna, let's just touch on unspent funds for this hybrid group. Explain what happens for this group with their unspent funds.
Yes, absolutely. This is something that's very, very important for hybrid participants to understand and remember. So as we've said a number of times already in this podcast, is the hybrids will be treated in the same way as the grandfathered participants until the 1st of July, 2025. So just like their grandfathered counterparts, the hybrid participants who are receiving a home care package are able to accumulate their unspent funds right up until the 30th of June, 2025. So they will be able to carry forward whatever unspent funds they have into the new supported home program. So moving forward, they won't have had as much time to do it as the grandfathered client. So we're not talking about big dollars here. But if, let's just say, a person has accumulated $4,000 or $5,000 in the 6 months or so that they've been on a home care package, they will be able to take that $5,000, roll it over into their supported home program. They will then continue to get their new quarterly budgets that reflect their package level, but broken into quarterly amounts rather than daily or monthly amounts. And they will also have access to those unspent funds. So if they need something and they need it quickly, they will be able to work with their provider, make sure it's reflecting their assessed needs, and then access those unspent funds in order to pay for it.
Excellent. So look, probably the biggest effect on this cohort is how the co-contributions are going to work. I know we touched on it already, but let's just take a little bit of a deeper dive. If you can explain for our listeners, please, Anna, why this group might be the most confused group, or maybe not, when it comes to the co-contributions.
You're quite right, Coral. This actually is very much a confusing part of the program for hybrid participants, and it is something that's been talked about a lot around these co-contributions. So I suppose what we need to understand is, why is this called a co-contribution? And I suppose the best way of understanding or explaining that is to say, let's just imagine that an hour of domestic assistance is $100 that the provider is going to charge the participant's package to deliver an hour of this service. So if it's $100, so we've got then two parties that are going to co-contribute to create that full $100. So we have, if it's $100 for an hour of domestic assistance, the government is going to contribute, say, $80 towards that $100. And then the participant is being asked to co-contribute $20 to make up that $100 hourly rate value. So it's essentially two parties co-contributing into the same bucket to create that $100 value. So hopefully that makes a little bit of sense. But the reason that there's confusion around this more broadly is that it really comes from a lack of information at critical points in a person's home care journey. And also it's confusing about co-contributions because at different times in a person's journey, if you like, they might be paying different types of fees. So, for example, a lot of people who come into the home care packages program have already gone through and as the CHSP program, which is a user pays fee for service model. So they're used to paying something for their services. And for the most part, that contributions program or, you know, framework seems to work quite well.
Yeah.
Then when people enter the home care packages program, the fee structure changes and it moves to this basic daily care fee for most people or an income tested care fee. But only around 87% of consumers in home care packages pay zero basic daily care fee, which means they're not paying a contribution at all for any of the care that they're receiving. So they've gone from CHSP where they're paying a fee. Then they move to home care packages where they're probably not paying a fee. And now with support at home, there's a new contributions framework that hybrid participants are going to have to contribute to. So I can see why this is confusing for people. So if we just go back in time for another moment and think about at the time of the initial assessment to determine a person's eligibility for a home care package, this is with the aged care assessment team or the single assessment service. What we know is that the assessor that is talking to the client is not having a conversation with them about the fees that they may or may not be required to pay when they are either going into home care packages or indeed moving into support at home. So it can be quite a shock when the person learns about these fees once they meet their home care provider for the first time. And of course, the amount that the hybrid participant is going to have to pay is varied depending on their pension status and their income. So yes, this is a confusing part. So there's no doubt it's going to take a lot of time for people to adjust to this new way of working. But remember that the most important thing for hybrids is that pretty much no fees up until the 30th of June, but then come the clock ticks over and the very next day, that new fee contribution framework will apply to hybrids because the no worse off principle does not apply to them.
For them, yeah. Fantastic. Wonderful explanation, Anna.
Community pharmacies keep Australia healthy. With 6,000 locations nationwide, they're open early, late, and longer for convenient, accessible, and safe care. Pharmacists provide home medicine reviews, dose administration aids, and essential vaccinations. Thanks to additional training, many can now treat common conditions like ear infections, wounds, and skin issues. They also support management of chronic conditions in partnership with your healthcare team. Ask your pharmacist how they can help you and your family stay well.
Look, so much confusion, but we're not going to get into all the confusing aspects of support at home. But another one I just wanted to chat with you today about is that if a person is assigned their package prior to July the 1st, so next month in June, they'll see care management fees or fee and package management fees on their statement. But then from July the 1st, those fees change. So this applies to the grandfathered group, but I think it might be more confusing for the transitional or hybrid group because the change happens so quickly, potentially from one month to the next. Can you explain that, please, Anna?
Well, I think it's almost debatable about whether it's more confusing or less confusing in many respects because if someone has 1 month under a particular conditions and then the next month it's changed, they haven't really had time to get used to what it means anyway. So if a person had one monthly statement or even two or three, that had package management and care management, and it's got all those other bits and pieces on it. I imagine that it's if they're entering the system that close to the transition date to supported home, I imagine that their provider will be saying to them, listen, you know what? All of this, don't get too used to this because it's going to be changing again in a couple of months' time. And they really haven't got time to get used to one system before the other one changes. So it may really be that it's the grandfathered group or the longer-term hybrids that are the ones that are going to have more difficulty readjusting to this new way of having their finances explained on these monthly statements. The new information that's come from the department about monthly statements in support at home, there's going to be plenty more for you to be talking about in your podcast in the future, Coral, because there's a lot of confusion around how they are going to look already.
I was just going to say that I actually agree with you, Anna. I do feel now, to listening to your explanation, that it is the people who have been in the system for quite some time who are used to the, and we're talking here about potentially people who are paying the income tested fee. We're kind of talking about everybody really, but people who have been used to seeing their statement set out one way and who might not have been contributing anything, or maybe they have, but what you've just said about how the new statements are going to look, that in itself is going to confuse people. I've had a look at them and I had to read it quite a few times. But I guess my point that I'm making is I think it's going to be more of an adjustment and more for people to get their head around when they've been in the system longer and what it's going to look like from 1st of July. So maybe the hybrid people who have just had that quick experience of pre-July the 1st, they're going to sail through this a lot easier, I think.
Yeah. And look, a lot of providers, or most providers really, have already started those conversations with their clients, whether they're grandfathered or hybrids. They are already having this conversation about the changes to care management fees or the changes to package management and how that's all going to be bundled into a single hourly rate. They are already having those conversations. So hopefully they're prepared for it. But of course, then once those statements start to be issued after in the new program, then there's going to be a lot of other questions that people will ask about, you know, how on earth am I supposed to make sense of this,
yes,
15 pages worth of information?
Exactly. Totally agree with you. There's something else I'd love to clarify with you today, Anna. So the hybrid group may not be assigned their package until after July the 1st. So even though these people, the hybrids, are waiting until after July the 1st to receive their assigned package, might not be till September or October, whenever, it's not going to be one of the new 8 levels of classifications, is it? It will still be a home care package level 1 to 4.
That's absolutely correct. And this is something that has been talked about quite a lot. So the most important piece of information to help people know which participant cohort they belong to is the date they were assessed as eligible by ACAT or the Single Assessment Service for a home care package level. It's not about the date that they are assigned or get their package. So, and we know it can be a considerable amount of time between the assessment and the assignment of those packages. So if a person is in this hybrid transition period, September 2024 to end of June 2025, if they are assessed as eligible for a home care package level within that period, no matter when they get assigned that package, they will be getting the value of that level 2 or level 3 or level 4 package when they finally do get that assigned to them, no matter what date that actually occurs. So they will still get that letter that tells them that they've been assigned a home care package level and the dollars that are attached to that. The only difference will be that they will receive that funding as a quarterly budget. And that's really the difference. But the dollar values will be the same as whatever the home care package level is that they were first approved for.
Thanks, Anna. An aspect of support at home that I haven't seen much conversation relating to is the special needs groups. Providers who have participants from any of the special needs groups will receive additional funding. Can you tell us what these groups are, Anna, and why they're receiving additional funding?
Sure. Yeah, this isn't brand new supplement. Okay, so it's called the Care Management Additional Supplement. And this new supplement in support at home acknowledges that there are, for some older people as they age, that they have quite special and complex needs relative to other people that are receiving these home care packages or support at home packages. So a person who is eligible for these supplements will be identified by Services Australia based on the information that's contained in their aged care assessment. So when they're having their assessment with the assessment services, these particular parts, special needs or complex needs, will be identified. It'll be flagged to Services Australia, and then Services Australia will provide the additional supplement to the provider on behalf of the client. Now, there are a number of groups that are eligible for this care management additional supplement, and they are veterans who are approved for the veterans supplement for aged care, older Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, people who are homeless or at risk of homelessness, people who are referred by the Care Finder program, and people who are care leavers, such as people who spent time in institutional or out of home care, forgotten Australians, former child migrants, a whole bunch of people that fit into that group as well. So there's essentially five groups of people who are identified as having complex and special needs, and that those people will be approved for an additional care management supplement of 3 hours per quarter of care management activities, care management support. So the client themselves don't receive any additional funding, but the provider that is supporting them with their care and services will have an extra 3 hours per quarter added to the pooled care management fund, so that they can then, as if those individuals that are eligible for the supplement, if they need additional care management support, then their provider will have the funding to be able to provide that to them. Although it's not going to show up like that they get 3 hours of specific care management per quarter in addition to their regular amount of care management, but it's more about giving the provider that's looking after their services and supports, it gives them more capacity to be able to respond if there are issues that come up for those particular people.
Excellent. Look, I think this is a great idea. I think any additional support and funding that providers can get to assist their more complex clients is a win-win for everyone. I guess the elephant in the room, and I'm going to say it, is that people living with dementia are not included in this group. And honestly, the complexity of need and the level of support that people living with dementia at home require is super significant. And I am speaking from personal experience here with my dad. So I'm going to be a little bit cheeky and say, ministers, if you are listening to this, it's not too late. You can revisit the admission of people who have dementia under this special group. It's not too late for you to include them into this group. And while we're talking about this, I'd also like to get some clarification from you about the primary supplements and what that means as we're moving into support at home on July the 1st. So I'll get you to tell our listeners what they are, because I feel that a lot of people are not aware what primary supplements are or mean. And then just unpack what might or might not happen with these primary supplements as we move into support at home.
Under the Home Care Packages program, there are additional supplements that are available for people who have specific needs. So I'll just quickly run through what each of those are and whether they, what's so the ones that are current under Home Care Packages and whether they're actually going to be moving forward into support at home. So the first one is the enteral feeding supplement. And this is for people who have special feeding needs, essentially. Yep. So they exist under the Home Care Packages program, and this supplement is expected to continue unchanged into support at home. No problem. Tick there. The oxygen supplement for people who need continuous administration of oxygen, that is also expected to continue unchanged into the new support retirement program. Then there's the veterans supplement, and this is for veterans with mental health problems and mental health conditions. Now, under support at home, the veterans supplement is going to be integrated into that new care management additional supplement that we just spoke about. So it's not going to be a standalone supplement. It'll actually become part of that new care management additional supplement so that providers will be able to be more flexible with the amount of care management support that they provide. But it doesn't mean that the veteran can use extra dollars in their package value to purchase additional care and services. Then there's the viability supplement, which is for people who are living in rural and remote areas. So this is for people who live in areas that are not well serviced. So that's paid to the provider to assist with providing care and services to them, given that they are usually the distances are longer to travel and so forth. So it can be used for them to supplement their access to, in the new program, to supplement their access to other parts of the supported home program. So at the moment, there is also a hardship supplement, which is being rebranded into a fee reduction supplement. Now, this is for people who are in significant financial hardship due to circumstances beyond their control, okay? So if they can't afford to pay their fees, then because for circumstances beyond their control, so it's saying if you spend all your money doing something that you love and you haven't got enough money for your home care fees, that doesn't count.
Mm.
It's more where you have really, really high costs associated with something that you can't control. So to get this supplement, the process that needs to be undertaken in the current system where you have to go through Services Australia, that supplement, the fee reduction supplement for people who are in significant financial hardship, will carry across into the Support at Home program. The criteria and eligibility and the process to apply for that does not change from home care packages to Support at Home. So everyone will still be able to apply for it. I'm going to say here, and I know that, you know, we're not afraid to sort of go somewhere that's a bit controversial, but it is very difficult to get that financial hardship supplement approved. My experience talking to lots of providers is that they have only very occasionally had someone approved for that hardship supplement. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, given that so many more people are going to be asked to pay a fee. So for them, if they really are struggling to pay their fees under Support at Home, I expect that Services Australia are going to be inundated with hardship applications. How many of them get approved is really up to Services Australia and their criteria.
I completely agree with you. I'm very apprehensive about what's going to happen in terms of this space. I guess we have to wait and see after July the 1st, and maybe Services Australia are going to need some boosting of their teams and their staff.
Indeed. Or they have to change the criteria to make it easier for people to get the supplement approved. Or indeed, look at how the fee structure or the fee framework works in the first place, maybe so we avoid having to get people stressed out and having to go through this process in the first place. And the final one of the supplements that's currently available under the Home Care Packages program is the Dementia and Cognition Supplement, which is in recognition, it's additional funding that's added to a person's home care package budget in recognition of those extra costs of caring for people with cognitive impairment that might be associated with dementia or other eligible cognitive conditions. Now, you'd mentioned just before that dementia supplement not being continued in the Support at Home program. So before I touch on that, because I find this rather confusing as well, but it's worth just noting that if any person who is receiving a dementia supplement up to the end of June 30, 2025, if anyone's receiving that supplement, that amount that they're receiving that's added on top of their current home care packages budget will be transferred across with them as part of their new quarterly budget into Support at Home. So whatever the amount is that they're getting right now, that will simply be added on top of their package budget and then split across those four quarters, so they will still have access to that additional amount it just won't be called as separate dementia supplement.
Mm.
So back to the fact that this is no longer being, that the dementia supplement is not going to be continued into the new program as a standalone supplement. So in fact, 2 points really. One, it's not a standalone supplement as it is now, but two, it doesn't even rate as an eligible special needs group. People living with dementia are not rating as a special needs group that warrant being included in that extra hour of power, 1 hour of extra care management per month. They're not included in that new care management additional supplement. And to me, that just doesn't make any sense at all. You know, how is it that on one hand, there's an identified and recognized need under the home care packages program that people might need that extra care and extra services, but not having that recognized for additional care management doesn't make sense to me.
Mm.
What we have been told is that the assessment services are instructed as part of their assessment when they are assessing for support at home, that they recognize and identify when a person is living with dementia, and then they will most likely then receive a higher level classification, which is more dollars for services, to compensate for the additional care and support that they might need. But I'm sure you would know more than anyone having it with your own life experience, Coral. It's not always hours of care that a person needs. Sometimes it's actually more care management.
Mm.
So the problem is that we're going to get people with living with dementia who have a higher level classification, but maybe they don't actually use those hours because for a whole bunch of different reasons. But what they might really benefit from is additional care management support, someone checking in with them, checking in with their family carers, making sure that they've got access to the right services and supports at the right time, given the variability of the condition that they're living with. So for mine, I totally agree with you. If there is anything that I would like to see, it is that I would like people living with dementia added to that care management additional supplement.
I 100% agree with you. And I know that we're not alone in how we feel about this. Anna, we've touched on some excellent topics relating to support at home in this episode, topics that I think aren't getting the airtime, the public conversation that other parts of support at home are. So I feel like this episode is going to be excellent for all our listeners. And I just wanted to say thank you. It's so good having you come on the show and explain things so simply and in such a relatable way that all our listeners can absolutely understand. They can make sense of what's really going on. So I really appreciate your time and you bringing all your wonderful knowledge and expertise to the show.
Thank you so much for having me again. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Listeners, I know you will have gained a lot from this episode today. Look forward to chatting with you again on the next episode. And until then, take care.
Hey, care community, thanks for listening to this episode. So you never miss a show, make sure you subscribe to our podcast. If you'd like to know more about what we do, head to our website, cmeacn.com.au.